am not ashamed of the gospel. And gospel means good news. And this is good news. It's good news about salvation through Messiah Jesus. And this good news and this good news alone releases the power of God to bring salvation to everyone who believes the message, first to the Jewish people and then to the Gentiles. Shalom. This is Rabbi Loren coming to you live by Skype from the studios of Congregation Shema Yisrael with another edition of Jesus Made Me Kosher. This is Wednesday, and Wednesday means that we're having our Bible study tonight at 6:30 at the facilities of Bloomfield Hills Baptist Church on Telegraph, just north of Long Lake. Rabbi Glenn teaches our Wednesday night Bible study, and he's going through a series on the book of Galatians. So if you're free this evening and looking for a good, solid Bible study, we encourage you to visit Glenn on Galatians. Well, today I want to talk about a truly horrible thing, and that is the issue of human trafficking. Karen Somerville is our guest, and she is a follower of the Messiah. She is a mother, a teacher, a grandmother, a neighbor, a sister, like many of you in the listening audience. And last year, she felt the Lord calling her in a whole new direction in her life. And so she resigned her position at Oakland Christian School, where she had been teaching. And her new journey includes not only raising awareness of the topic of human trafficking and the lures of traffickers, but also helps point to resources and opportunities to impact our local communities to fight this evil. So, Karen, good to have you today on Jesus Made Me Kosher.
Thank you, Rabbi Loren. It's a pleasure to be with you and your listening audience.
Thank you. Well, Karen, let's start off with you, with your story. How did the living God reach you? How did Jesus make you kosher?
Well, like many people in the United States, they were probably taken to church as a child on two of Christianity's big holidays, that being Christmas and Easter. And I, like many other people, experienced that as well. So I knew about Jesus, but I didn't know Jesus. But as I continued to grow in the transition between high school and college, I began to notice people who were very different from me. There was a woman who would witness to me while I was at work in the hospital as a high schooler, who would just share Christ with me. And when I was in college, I was surrounded by several Christ followers who actually lived what they talked about. And it became very obvious to me that even though I knew of Jesus, I didn't know Jesus. So about 19, I went and heard the word preached at an evangelistic campaign and came home very convicted but too proud to bend my knee. And that night I was reading the word of God and realized that in 2 Corinthians 5:17, where it says that if there is anyone who is in Christ, he is a new creation. The old is gone and the new is here. I realized there were things that I, even at a young age, would wish I could redo over. And I had regrets about it, and I knew the only way to have a new life was to submit to Christ. So I went back to that evangelistic campaign and stepped forward to surrender my life to Jesus. And I've never looked back, and I am so thankful for the salvation that he has given me.
That's great, Karen. Thank you for sharing your story with us. Well, let's talk about this very real and truly horrible issue of human trafficking. What is human trafficking? What is it?
Well, there is a lovely federal definition, which is very easy to understand, but I'll break it down like this. Human trafficking is the practice of people that are tricked, lured, coerced, or otherwise removed from their home or their country, and then compelled to work with little or no payment. So if they're from outside the country, oftentimes their passports are taken from them. And victims from human trafficking are used in a variety of situations, which it can include prostitution, bonded labor, debt bondage, and other forms of involuntary service. And the trade and sale of babies and children for adoption and other purposes is also considered to be trafficking in children.
How did you get involved or interested in this issue of human trafficking?
Well, I don't know that I ever necessarily got interested in it, but many, many years ago when I was not living in the United States, my husband and I were helping a very poor family of very little resources. And through a series of situations, we began to notice their need. So a friend and I had decided that we would make clothing and make presents for these three little girls at Christmas time, knowing that they wouldn't have any Christmas presents. So that was all exciting. But in the meantime, the mother took ill and had to go in the hospital. They removed about a 17-pound tumor from her stomach. And we went up on Christmas Eve to read scripture and sing to her and just visit with her a while. And as we were all saying goodbye, I was the last one to leave. She passed away in my arms. So I had to go tell those little girls that Mama was never coming home. And I was very grieved about that. 8 months later, their father went in for a very similar procedure, and he went in for a simple procedure, and he died on the operating table. And we were contacted because we were a family that was helping them. We didn't know that there were any relatives in town. And I remember crying myself to sleep because I didn't know what would become of those three precious little girls, 10, 8, and 5. My husband very wisely said, "Oh, I'm sure the court will look for family members," which had not occurred to me, and rightfully so, they did. And we were in court when someone came in to claim the little girls, and I took one look at this man, though I spoke very little Spanish at that time, and I knew he was evil. Everyone else in my church community knew who he was, but I did not. So after the judge said we're going to look for other people, I prodded my friends from church and said, "Who is that man? He is scary and evil," and they told me that he ran a brothel on the wrong side of town. And I was convinced we were going to do whatever we could to free those little girls from having to go to that home. Well, they found family in the north of the country, and they came down, and a court battle ensued, and the judge eventually sided with the family from out of town. And I've had contact with them in the years that have followed and can tell you that they were adopted by this family, they turned out to be Christians, and they've been raised in a loving environment. So it sort of found me, and it found me again about 7 years ago as I was researching biblical heroes to teach to my high school students that I ministered to in my church, and discovered that Detroit is a major port for human trafficking, which has sent me investigating, reading, training, and networking. So I really feel drawn into this battle, and I am very committed to it.
Really, Detroit is a major conduit for human trafficking?
Yes, we are a city that has an international border crossing, and there are several push-pull factors in society that would allow it to exist. But the bottom line is, what we know from the FBI and other federal agencies, wherever you see drugs and you see weapons, you will often see trafficking in humans. On a very simple scale, but Detroit is unique in that it is an international border crossing.
And so there's more than, there's a greater percentage than normal, huh?
Yes, yes. And it turns out by federal standards, and they're investigating, that Toledo, Ohio is the fourth worst human trafficking city in the nation, and we are a little more than an hour away from Toledo. And because we have push-pull factors in Detroit, that creates a lot of traffic up and down the I-75 corridor.
Karen, I'm not familiar with that expression. You use push-pull factors. What is a push-pull factor?
When you have poverty, that can push people towards finding other ways to earn income that will give them greater benefit with less effort. A pull factor could be the depleting, and we've seen this in Michigan, the depleting of our labor force due to economic factors, so that creates vacuums. Industry closes, unemployment goes up. That's what I mean by push and pull factors.
So lack of opportunity, poverty increases the desire for human trafficking.
Yes.
Okay.
It can be part of it, yes.
All right. How many children are affected by human trafficking globally and nationally?
Well, it is, by those who know, they say that 2 million is the number of children that are exploited by the global commercial sexual trade. And within the borders of the United States, the FBI states that there's between 100,000 and 300,000 American children who are trafficked within our borders every year.
Wow. That's huge.
That's a big number. Yes, it is. And 2 children are forced into commercial sexual slavery worldwide every minute.
2 children every minute are forced to become sexual slaves?
Mm-hmm. Worldwide, yes.
What a nightmare.
It is a nightmare. And that number of 2 million children, 80% of that of the trafficked victims globally are women, and 60% are children.
It's really horrible.
So there are small boys who are also trafficked, but it is an alarming number.
When we talk about human trafficking in the United States, you mentioned the figures 100,000 to 300,000. Is that mostly the breakdown of, you know, like slave labor, manual, you know, work, or are we also talking about the sex trade here?
We are talking about the sex trade as well. What happens in the United States is a variety of things. You may have children who come from very good neighborhoods with very good backgrounds, but they're bored and they get sucked into it and lured into it in the mall, which is a place that traffickers go to look for their next victims, among other places. And it can also be the children who run away from home. The traffickers are very astute at checking the train stations, the bus stations, and they can read body language very easily to figure out who is trying to get their bearings and not familiar with their surroundings. And we also use a term, I don't particularly like it, but I've seen it written in the literature, the throwaway children who age out of foster care, that nobody seems to care about, and the like. So it can be both those who have a family unit and those who are at risk for whatever reason and don't.
But that's, and 80% of those who get caught up in human trafficking are women, and 60% of them are children.
Yes, yes.
Really horrible.
Yes.
Hard to express, you know, just the evil.
It is very evil. Go ahead.
What does the face of human trafficking look like?
The face of human trafficking? Are you making reference to the victims or to the perpetrators?
I'll take a response from either. Or about either.
About either.
Yeah.
Well, oftentimes a victim are going to look like people that you and I may see every day. Sometimes it takes looking a little bit beneath the surface, if you will. If you've seen signs or evidence of someone being controlled or someone who has the inability to move or leave their job, possibly you see signs of bruising or other signs of battering. You see fear, depression, specifically if you see non-English speaking. If someone has recently come to this country from Eastern Europe, Asia, Latin America, Canada, Africa, or India, that could not automatically, but you should look and kind of pile the layers of evidence in front of you. They may be a foreigner who has no passport, doesn't have any identification or documentation. It could be any number of those things. There are many cases where people have been trafficked through restaurants, foreign food, where they just see the same person who works there for a period, and then it seems like there's a whole new group of people that start working there. There have been cases in California, New York, and Chicago where trafficking victims have come out of restaurants. Sometimes they have come out of lawn care. They've immigrated. There was a dairy case in the center of the state of Michigan where the dairy farmer used illegal aliens and hid them away. We have seen cases of sweatshops in L.A. and New York where illegal aliens are hidden away. They're not allowed to leave. They're not allowed to go anywhere, and they work extended hours in the garment industry. So it is here in the U.S. We tend to think it's out there somewhere else, but it is not. Now, with regard to the trafficker can be a very friendly person, a very persuasive person that can zoom in and create a lack of space between the person they're pursuing and themselves, show way too much interest. A lot of times we see very young girls with very old, quote, boyfriends who promise the sun, the moon, and the stars, and they'll do anything for them.
And they're setting them up possibly to be involved in human trafficking,
yes.
Prostitution.
Yes.
Where are the traffickers recruiting?
They are recruiting in middle schools and high schools, courtrooms, hallways of the court buildings, foster homes, bus stations, group homes, homeless shelters, halfway houses, restaurants and bars, parks and playgrounds and malls.
So pretty much everywhere.
Just about everywhere.
Tell us about some common lures that we could be aware of that the traffickers employ.
There are a number of lures that have been identified. An affection lure is probably one that is very prevalent, especially among middle school and high schoolers. It could be by someone the child knows or trusts, but they'll try to take advantage of the tension in a child or a teen's life, which could be any number of things. It could be produced by divorce or family or alcoholism or neglect. And they'll look for the troubled kids and promise to help them out. And they will often get them involved emotionally to try to give them a quasi-sense of security and a dating relationship. They can use an assistance, let me help you type idea. So they will oftentimes target middle schoolers or high schoolers or even younger children. Mostly adults do not need the assistance of small children, so that's always a good conversation to have with your small children. They can use the authority. It could be a power position like a coach or a clergy or scout leader, using their position. It's always good to let children know that it is absolutely inappropriate for anybody to touch them in their bathing suit zone. They can use a bribery, gifts, candy, whatever, to try to get in their space. They could use the idea of a hero. Molesters and sex traffickers will exploit children and a young person by making them believe that something bad will happen to someone that they see as a hero. That hero could be a teacher, a parent, a coach, so they will go along with it. They could do the companion or the playmate lure. They will often go use their home as a lure, so they may be living in varying communities. The home will be decorated with whatever they're going after, the sporting goods or party supplies, toys. For the older kids, they'll use alcohol and drugs, make the environment of anything goes. That's a lure. We have heard, but I cannot not reiterate, the importance of the online situation with computers and stalking and chat rooms. Parents really need to prepare their young people for that. One of the common ones that we see for not just here in the U.S., but from people coming into the U.S. is the lure of a job, whether it's going to be modeling or being a nanny or working in a restaurant. They will use fake post office boxes to appear to be legit, but these are not real jobs. They will be turned into the nightmare they don't want. They'll use drugs. They'll use pornography with older kids. There are a number of lures.
Karen, you think this is really happening here in Metro Detroit?
Yes, it is. In fact, I have a clip in front of me from My Fox Detroit from March 28th of 2011. A woman from St. Clair County was caught by police. She was offering her 4-year-old daughter for sex.
Wow.
There was a large ring that was taken down in 2008 and prosecuted in 2009. Some people have heard of him. His name is Detroit Slim and Motor City. Dennis Page was in the Motor City. He got 12 and a half years in prison. He was a 35-year-old man. Novi.
For doing what?
He had prostituting minors. He had over 90 prostitutes in his prostitution ring, and he was operating in child prostitution website.
Wow.
So, yep, it's here. We've seen cases in Grand Rapids. We had a multi-state prostitution ring busted in May of 2011. They'd been smuggling from the U.S. and Mexico and other Latin American countries, and they were forced into brothels in Grand Rapids, in Chicago, Indianapolis, and Cincinnati.
Wow, I didn't know that.
So, yeah, it's here. I know people tend to think it's over there, wherever they choose over there to be, Southeast Asia, but it's here.
Okay. What can we do to help stop this nightmare?
There are a number of things. I think every citizen should program into their cell phone the human trafficking hotline, and that is 1-888-373-7888. If you see something that does not sit with you and it doesn't add up and it doesn't seem right, you can call that hotline. It is not the citizen's responsibility to prove whether this is true or not. It's simply a tip. It is the onus of the agency you report to prove if that is true or not. And I can tell you that law enforcement many times in my trainings has reiterated that citizens are so powerful to help law enforcement do their job. Classic case, I went and had my nails done a number of years ago, and the woman in front of me was shaking in her boots the entire time I had my hands done. And I passed on to the pedicure table, and I started noticing that every time a certain man walked by, this woman started getting nervous and shaking. And I had a friend with me, and it turns out that the woman who was doing her nails experienced the same thing. And I got up to go to the restroom before I sat down into the pedicure chair and went the wrong way, and the man who was walking that floor intercepted me so fast and escorted me off to another place. And every time that man walked by us as we got our pedicures done, these women were shaking, and that did not seem right to me. They could not communicate with me. They only spoke whatever language they were able, their native language, which was not English. I should have called this hotline had I known that number and said, you know, this place had this done, didn't make sense, doesn't add up. It's the government's job to look into it, and many times it's citizens who give.
Karen,
tips.
Yes. Give us that. We only have about a minute left. Give us that number again.
It's 1-888-373-7888, Human Trafficking Hotline.
All right. In just about 30 seconds, anything else we can do in a practical way?
Absolutely. You can get involved with your city, get to know your police officers, ask if there's anything in your community that's for the community to address this issue. Check with your churches. I can tell you about Light Ministry at Clarkson Community Church, which is an abolitionist group. We do all kinds of things, walks, fundraising, raising awareness. There are many ways.
Any specific ministry or phone number you can direct us to?
Light Ministry at Clarkson Community Church. Pastor Bonnie Laudeman is the woman in charge of Light Ministry.
Okay. Karen, thank you so much for being my guest on Jesus Made Me Kosher today. You really informed me about the seriousness and the reality of this issue of human trafficking here in the Midwest, here in Detroit. I had no idea that Detroit was a major conduit, and Toledo, just an hour south of here, was one of the fourth largest centers for human trafficking in the United States. Thank you for bringing our audience to awareness of this issue, and thank you for your involvement.
Well, thank you very much.
All right. This is Rabbi Lauren. You're listening to Jesus Made Me Kosher. And again, our Bible study is this evening, Wednesday, at the facilities of Bloomfield Hills Baptist Church. Rabbi Glenn will continue his series on the book of Galatians. So you'll enjoy Rabbi Glenn on Galatians tonight at 6:30. And let's be aware of this whole issue of human trafficking, and let's be alert and praying that this terrible evil would come to an end. Again, Rabbi Lauren, shalom, shalom from all of us who are part of Congregation Shema Yisrael.
Jesus Made Me Kosher is sponsored by Congregation Shema Yisrael, a community of Messianic Jews and kosher-hearted Gentiles who serve the three-in-one God of Israel. You can find us on the web at shema.com. That's S-H-E-M-A.com. If you'd like more information or have questions, you can also reach us by phone at 248-593-5150. That's 248-593-5150. To hear how Jesus can make you kosher, join us every weekday at 3:30 right here on Faith Talk 1500.